podcast, Wednesday, November 30th, 2011. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the show. I have to be honest with you. It's getting to that crunch time of the year, the end of the year. Things get a little bit crazy, a little bit hectic. We've got the holidays upon us. We just finished here in the States Thanksgiving. I hope those of you who celebrated that had a nice time with your friends and family, doing whatever you do to celebrate the holiday. For the rest of us, I think, you know, we're getting ready for the holiday season and planning for what's going to be coming in the next year. And it just gets a little bit wild. And that happens for me. I'm sure it happens for you as well. And so this episode, I just wanted to do something fun, do something a little bit different. I had an opportunity. I had scheduled a conversation with David Sparks that I was going to do as a MacCast member show, but decided that, you know, I just wanted to sit down and geek out and do nothing more than that, not have to worry or stress about anything else. So kind of no prep on this episode. I just sat down with David and we kind of took the conversation, whatever Mac, Apple, geeky directions we wanted to go in. And I discovered that maybe that's not always the best plan for me either. It may or may not be obvious to you, but I spend a lot of time preparing the episodes of the MacCast. I do a lot of research. I get my notes in front of me. And apparently when I'm going off the cuff, I can get confused a little bit. You'll hear that in this episode. I was certain that there were no iCloud storage APIs made available to developers. And it turns out there actually are, as David tried to point out to me, but I just wasn't hearing any of it. So funny little moment in there, actually kind of embarrassing for me, to be honest. But I realize now in hindsight, of course, hindsight's 2020, I went out and did the research and I obviously mixed up the lack of Siri APIs that developers are looking for with the iCloud storage APIs. But developers out there, please forgive me. But it was a great time talking to David. It's always fun to have him on the show. And I really hope you enjoy this episode because I had a good time recording it, even with my warts, showing my warts a little bit. But before we dive into that, I wanted to take a moment and recognize a couple of our show sponsors. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. Great application for getting organized. And this time of year, the end of the year, I'm getting ready for tax season coming up. I know I don't like to think about it. You probably don't like to think about it either, but it happens. And I have a point in time, usually around February, where I'm going to go in, I'm going to meet with my tax professional, and I want to get all my thoughts and notes and stuff like that organized. And Notebook is perfect for that because I can make outlines, I can make lists, checklists for things that I need to remember to bring to that meeting. I can organize all that in different sections. I can add in flags and highlighting additional notes. I can even throw in PDF documents and other supporting documents and files, maybe receipt scans and that sort of stuff, and get it all in this virtual notebook. It used to be we'd have this big paper physical thing. I don't do that anymore. I'm completely digital. And Notebook ends up being a great tool where I can kind of consolidate that, bring that all together. I can start working on it now, add little bits and pieces as I go along. And by the time I get to the point where I'm going to that meeting, I have it all together. And it's quick and easy to find because they have the multi-decks. If I need to search through something there, it's automatically indexed in all kinds of different ways. And I can just flip to right to the section that I need to get to. And it ends up being incredibly convenient. And that's just another one of those ways that Notebook is integrated into my life. Originally, when I picked it up, it was just for taking notes. And I found that I use it in all these different aspects, and it's completely useful. It is a really great tool, and you should check it out. There are free trials available over at circusponies.com, and thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. The other sponsor I want to tell you about today is a new sponsor, and they have a really cool thing going on coming up in just about a week, so you need to act on this if you want to take advantage of it. A company called RunRev, they have a coding environment, a platform called LiveCode, and they're doing something called the LiveCode Game Academy. So if you go to RunRev, R-U-N-R-E-V, runrev.com/academy, MacCast. You can get the details, but basically what it is, it's a free 7-week online course where you learn to program a mobile game from the ground up. And it's a game that can run on multiple platforms, iOS and Android, right from the same code base. The course has everything you need included. They're going to do webinars. They're going to provide you with reading materials, sample code, working examples, and a free trial version of the live code development software. You don't have to have any programming experience because of how the application actually works. So if you've been thinking about getting into iOS programming, wondering where to start, this might be a good way to get your feet wet. Jump in. The course starts on December 6th and runs through December 31st. So if you're a student, maybe somebody who has some extra time this time of year around the holidays and you want to learn a new skill, this is a great opportunity to do that. Live Code is a platform also that you can take the skills you're going to learn from developing a game and then use their tools to build other types of applications like business applications or educational applications. And even if you decide not to take advantage of the course, you probably want to check out Live Code anyway. You know, I'm a developer. A bunch of listeners had told me about this platform and I had never really looked into it. I did some investigating. I went through their tutorial application. They have a tutorial online, a bunch of tutorials online actually, but I went through their, you know, classic Hello World program, and it was very easy to dive into and get up and running. It's even friendly to non-programmers, and that same code that you develop, you can deploy to web, desktop, and mobile apps. So it applies across multiple platforms, across multiple systems. Space is limited for this class. It is first come, first served. So sign up now. You go to runrev.com/academy/MacCast. And a big thank you to RunRev for their support of the MacCast. So what do you say? You ready to do a little Mac geeking out for about 45, 50 minutes? I certainly am. So let's get right to it. Here's my conversation with David Sparks. Hey, David, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm really happy to be on your show again.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on, and I have to be honest with everybody. I was going to get you on, and we were going to talk about iCloud. I think I still want to talk about that a little bit, and we were going to do it as a member show, but I had some things at the end of this month. I don't even know if you saw, and I generally don't talk about this, but I probably should mention it to MacCast listeners because the schedule's been a little bit chaotic. I had a little medical thing happen.
Oh, no.
Yeah, right before Thanksgiving. Turned out to be fine. So I'm fine. Everything's great. But I was getting these really weird headaches, and they sent me in for an MRI, and it was a little hairy there for a little bit. So the whole schedule got thrown off a little bit. So I'm getting later in the month. And so I kind of sprung this on you since I was going to have you on. I asked you if you could just sit down and kind of geek out on Mac stuff, and we could share it with the MacCast community, and you graciously agreed to do that. So thank you.
I cannot resist the MacCast for a couple of reasons. First of all, I've never told you this, but yours was the very first Mac podcast I ever listened to.
Cool.
Yeah. I was traveling. I was in Indianapolis on a case, and I thought, well, I'll try one of these podcasts. And this very friendly guy came on my iPod, and I immediately liked you. Oh. So I'm really, really privileged to be on this show.
Well, and now we actually know each other because we live so close. We get to hang out and see each other every once in a while, and it's great.
The other thing I love about your show is I always make new friends after I'm on the MacCast. I get emails from some of your listeners who had never heard of me before. So that's great. I like meeting new people. So,
well, that was the genesis of the MacCast. You probably know this because I talk about it on the show, but I mean, it was all about the community, and that's why I'm a Mac geek. I think that's why a lot of us are Mac users is really just the community. And I came out of the old school days where we went to user groups.
Yeah.
You know, we actually hung out with people face to face.
What is that? I don't understand
these
that.
Younger. Well, I still go. I think it's great, and I encourage people to go. Unfortunately, I think the user group is kind of a dying entity, and I'm really sad to see that because I think there's a whole different experience, which is why I think we get together, right? We started to make a point to get together once in a while and just geek out face to face, and it's really a different experience. You really learn different things. And the other thing that I found with the user groups, because they are sometimes older Mac users that have been in the community since like the Apple II days, one, they have great stories, you know, just really cool stuff. You can meet people who are just these incredible engineers and scientists and stuff like that. So I like swapping stories with those people. But the other thing is very often someone will have, I call it fresh eyes or fresh perspective on something. Right. So you get kind of mired in your processes. And that's a little bit what I wanted to talk to you about on this episode, is just sharing workflows and how sort of how you do things on your Mac, because you might do certain things in one way and I do something differently. So someone will ask a question, you know, I'm having this sort of problem or that sort of problem, or I need software to do this, or I was wondering how to do this in this program. And inevitably, you know, I'll give an answer thinking, oh, I've been using Macs forever. I know how to do this. And then somebody will go, well, did you actually know you could do this?
Yeah.
It's like, I had no idea you could do it that way. But that's really cool. And that's actually better than the way I was doing it for 10 years.
And there's a whole category of people that get a thrill from hearing that. And I am in that group. I love learning new ways to do stuff.
I think we absolutely all do. Let's maybe start with iCloud and then see where that goes, because I'm curious to get your just opinion and take. I know when you were working on the book, you kind of were in the whole iCloud thing early, right? Because
yes, sort of. We all were kind of in it early. We had access for iOS and reliable sources told me that it was going to be on iWork for the Mac about the time the book came out, and I wrote about it, and it's not. So yeah. I'm a little frustrated with it, to be honest with you.
Probably should fill everybody on the book. I don't know if... Well, we talked about it last time you were on.
Yeah.
You just put out the iPad at Work book.
Yes. Remarkably successful. I'm so happy. Thank you, listeners who have bought it. It's it's really... You know, people all over the world are using the book. You know, iPad at Work. I got an email from a guy in England who's teaching a whole class with the book. So
oh, very
that's cool. Yeah.
So if you're looking for ways to be more productive with your iPad, especially in a business environment, you should definitely check that out. But related to that, I mean, so you started playing around with some of the iCloud stuff. I've been using it. I didn't jump in when I was, because I'm in the developer program also, but I didn't jump in early because I was afraid of the whole conversion of, Mobile Me accounts. So I'm curious to find out what you did. Did you actually convert your Mobile Me account over? Because I didn't go that route.
It's kind of scary.
I just
put my hand over my eyes, reached down, and clicked.
So you did?
Yeah, I did. Well, I had used the test account for a while, but, you know, I was writing this book, and we wanted the book to come out when iOS 5 came out. And I figured I had to eat my own dog food on this thing. So at some point, I just said, okay, I'm in. I made backups of everything, obviously. But I just did it. I converted over. And it worked fine. I mean, my frustration is really the failure to deliver on documents in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
It works great on the iOS devices. Like, well, I'm very creative with the way I use numbers. And I use numbers in a lot of ways that have nothing to do with spreadsheets. And those numbers sheets jump between my iPhone and my iPad, lickety split, and it's great. I just want that to work on my Mac too. And they haven't released a version of iWork that does that.
Do you have a sense, or, I mean, what's your take? Obviously we don't know, right? But what's your take on why that is? Why is that so incomplete?
Just to preface, I don't work at Apple, so I really have no idea why it hasn't happened.
Right.
I can make some, I guess, speculation that
they probably haven't. What I'm asking. I'm going to put you on the spot. I was going to say not to put you on the spot, but yeah, I'm going to put you on the spot just as a Mac geek and a fan, because the hooks are even in there. That's the thing that I discovered recently, and I think I shared a tip about how you can go into your library folder, right? And there's actually a mobile documents folder or something like that in there.
Yeah. Ted Landau wrote a nice article on it for Macworld.
Yeah.
Or you could also, you can relate it to your Dropbox. There's several ways that you can get kind of seamless access on your Mac, but they all involve, a light degree of hacking, which to me is kind of inexcusable. And I hate to use that because there probably is a lot of good reasons why, but I'm sure that, figuring out exactly how the user interface is going to handle that, because on your Mac, you're not just going to be looking at iCloud. You know, on your iOS device, you say, am I using iCloud or not? And it's all or nothing. And on your Mac, you're not going to want that. You're going to want some stuff that's on iCloud and some stuff that isn't. And I'm sure they haven't got the exact mechanics of it worked out. But then again, a part of me says, well, they've known about this a lot longer than we have. And why didn't they figure it out?
Right.
You know, I mean, why is this a sample of, you know, I hate to be that guy. Is this a sample of something where they shipped before they should have, something that wouldn't have happened, you know, when Mr. Jobs was around?
An incomplete product.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of frustrating. And
but haven't they done that a lot in the cloud? I mean,
yeah,
it
yeah,
seems like they're making the same mistakes over and over again. And I guess this is where my frustration comes in. Is this just seems like Apple, for some reason, doesn't get the cloud. I don't understand the whole syncing everywhere all the time mentality of documents in the cloud.
Well, you know, I'll give them more credit than that. I think that this is a much more successful launch than MobileMe was. And I think it's a probably exponentially more complicated launch than MobileMe was, because this is hooked into everything. And I think by and large, they got the iTunes in the cloud right. They got the document syncing. They got free calendar and email out to everybody. You know, there's a lot of it that they got right. But this one piece with iWork is kind of vexing. And I also think it's just weird that we still are using iWork 09 and we're almost in 2012. So, but and I suspect that those things are related, that they're probably trying to push, you know, a new version of iWork out. I'm shocked that we don't have it yet. And I'm sure when we do get it, it's going to take care of this problem. But I would have liked to seen them even just push out something in the interim that let us work with the existing version without having to be able to go in and do the kinds of hacks that Ted wrote about. And it's a little frustrating, but I don't think they've blown it. And I really am kind of excited about their vision of a cloud service, because it's so different from anything we've ever seen before. I mean, their idea is that, you know, it's going to be app-based and you're not going to have to think about what folder it's in Dropbox, which for someone like you and me and probably your thousands of listeners isn't such a big deal. But when I think about a lot of people in my life who, you know, the Finder is completely foreign to them, I think it's a really big deal for those people. It's going to be like magic for them. And so I can see where they're going. I just don't think they're quite there yet. It's not fully baked.
Well, yeah, but that seems to be the mistake that they make. But let's talk a little bit. I want to get back to your comment about iTunes and the cloud being right, because when you say that, I think you're not talking about iTunes Match, right?
Actually, I am.
Oh, well, let's get back to that, because I want to stay on this documents thing,
yeah,
and then talk about maybe some of the cloud services that are working for you. And I want to come back to the iTunes thing, because I'm really curious to get your take on that, because I think I disagree with you a little bit there.
On
documents in the cloud with you know, the whole idea of it not being fully baked. I think I've heard a couple things and seen a couple things from developers who are like, please let us have an API. Right? Because as you were mentioning, I think this gets really interesting when third-party apps can also tie into it.
Yeah, but that's already happening.
But not officially, right? There's no official API, from what I understand, that developers can tap into.
As I understand it, it exists already. And I don't know if I can really talk about it or not, but
I know Omni did something, but it wasn't official, right?
Are you talking about Siri or Documents in the Cloud?
Documents in the Cloud.
No, Documents in the Cloud, there was a bunch of coverage at WWDC that there is an API. And maybe I'm just completely, you know, talking out of you know what right now. But as I understand it, there is an API. There's already developers that are using it. I know that, you know, my favorite text editor, Byword, is in the process of putting something together on it. And I know that another one, I forget the name of it now, there's another popular text editor that just came out with support, as I understand it, includes iCloud support.
Okay, because I thought I was reading something that Omni baked in something into one of their apps, but it it was kind of working around the current system.
I think Omni has stated in their forums that their intention is to put like Omni Outliner into iCloud documents. So when you're working between the Mac and your mobile devices, to have that. And I think it's in there. I think the problem, boy, you know, I really feel like I'm just going all over the cliff here. There's some developer out right now that's like banging his head against something hard. But
we probably are. Yeah. You know, again, I had this head thing, so maybe I'm completely wrong.
Yeah, but as I understand it, there is some question as to like when you update the version, does that screw up? You know, like you update the version on the iPad, but not on the Mac, or you know, if the document format changes, does everything go kablooey? I think there are some complications, but I do believe Apple has at least an API baked in at this point. And,
okay.
And well, if I'm wrong, write me. And I'm really sorry if I'm wrong, but I think that's my understanding of the situation, that I think a lot of developers are just not ready to fully embrace it yet because they're not ready, convinced that everything is where it should be.
Well, the good news is one of us is wrong, and,
yeah.
and we'll get those emails. So it's either you or
yeah.
me.
Yeah, it's probably me.
No, I'm not gonna say that because again, we didn't. This is just off the cuff to remind everybody. So you know,
yeah, this is fun because see, on my show, we do a lot of planning. Here, I'm just going for it.
Be gentle, but I think the end result is the same, though, right? We don't have, as far as I know, there's not a major third party app that I'm aware of on iOS that's integrated with Documents in the Cloud yet. I think I can safely say that I haven't run across one yet. And I think there'd be a big deal made about anyone that would be out there.
You don't mind if I make a little noise as I sit here? I want to look. It's driving me crazy. I can't remember the name of that app.
Well, while you're doing that, let's talk a little bit more about what is working for you, though, with iCloud. So your converting of your account worked okay.
Yeah, fine. No problems. And all of my family accounts. We never didn't have any problems.
And see, that's because you had family accounts. I think for me, the reason I didn't want to convert mine was my wife and I shared one MobileMe account that was tied into my Apple ID, which is the same as my Apple ID, and that's what I used for purchasing all my music and stuff like that. So actually, it turned out one nice thing about iCloud turned out to be the fact that we could finally separate that. And I think it's not real clear to a lot of people that your Apple ID can remain separate from your iCloud account. And I know
Adam,
that was a...
Yep. I'm sorry to interrupt. IA Writer just came out with a version for the Mac and the iPad that uses iCloud document storage.
Oh, awesome.
IA Writer.
So I'm glad I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, so it's out there, but I'm not sure that it's fully baked yet. I mean, that kind of proves your point that it might not be in a condition where developers feel comfortable using it.
So I'm going to have to go look into that. So we'll be talking about that for sure on future shows.
And it's on sale for $9. I think I might have to buy it just to see how it works.
I've heard of IA Writer before.
It's a good app on the iPad. I haven't. It was $20. I couldn't justify it on the Mac, but for $9, I might just have to do it
through the Mac or the Mac App Store. That's another thing that bothers me.
All right, hit it.
No, just it's the App Store. I think on OS X, it's just the App Store, right?
Yeah.
The one for the Mac.
Yeah.
But there's no way when you're just talking about it to when you say App Store, people immediately, because it's been out for so much longer, assume you're talking about the iOS App Store.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of confusing.
Or the iTunes App Store. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah. Like, Mac App Store.
So I guess that there the larger part of that complaint, and I don't want to sound like we're complaining about Apple stuff because I think there's some good stuff that I want to talk about too, especially with iCloud that I'm enjoying. One, you know, converting of the account and using the accounts, although there's still the confusion about merging accounts. A lot of people want to know at what point can I merge my Apple IDs, but I think we've heard that there's rumors that Apple's working on something to deal with that issue at some point.
Yeah. But you can realize, you know, you can use multiple accounts on a single device, like on your phone or your iPad. You could use your traditional family iTunes account to manage your music and your app purchases and your iCloud.me account for your email and your calendar.
You're aware of that. Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what I've done. And that has worked out fabulously. And I don't know about you. I haven't heard anybody else complaining, but syncing of contacts and calendar and all that stuff seems to work great for me.
Yeah. And if you recall MobileMe, when they came out, it was just a big, ugly mess, but that's been generally working.
Yeah, I think they had a few little email outages that I heard about, but I don't rely on my iCloud.me email. That's not my primary email, so that's never been one that's hit me. But I know that's frustrating for people who have that when that system's down. But Gmail goes down, Yahoo Mail goes down. I mean, they all hit those little outages. Yeah. So I don't,
and I haven't had any outages, but occasionally I get this thing where it asks for its password several times and then it goes away. I'm not really sure what that's about.
That's interesting. But I think one of the things that is the larger picture of this and where it manifests itself most recently for me beyond iCloud and this sort of App Store stuff and iTunes is, you know, a lot of this technology, I think it's hard to remember, a lot of it has just been sort of evolving over time. And so a lot of these things started out as one vision and adapted into another vision. And just as a programmer, as a developer, that's always a problem. You know, there comes a certain point where you say, you know, do we keep developing this thing or do we have to completely cut bait and switch over to something else? And iCloud feels that way to me. Like it's kind of a reboot. And now we have to think, well, they're starting up, but they're starting with a platform they can work off of. Whereas I think like MobileMe, you know, kind of came out of
.Mac, which came out of
iTools. Right, exactly. And same thing, like a lot of people are talking, a story that's been surfacing that I'm excited about, I talked about on the last show, is integrated messaging on the Mac and on the iPhone. You know, there's some hints that maybe some of the iChat features are going to come into the messaging app on the iOS device. And I'd like to see the opposite happen, too, on the desktop, where I don't want to have, you know, FaceTime and iChat and, you know, SMS messages and something else. You know, everything kind of separated. It'd be nice if there's just one client that works on the Mac, works on your iOS device with iMessage, and it's all integrated into one thing.
And that sounds like right up Apple's wheelhouse. That's exactly how they would do it.
Yeah, had they started it that way from the beginning. But a lot of people go, well, why didn't they do it that way, you know, right from the beginning? And it's, well, because they had iChat and they had developed video chat into iChat. But then they got these mobile devices and they wanted to have video on that. And so then they developed, you know, FaceTime. And so now you've got the FaceTime technology. But I think there is generally when they start redoing some of these technologies, they have a bigger master vision and maybe it doesn't roll out all at once. Because they want to put out bits and pieces and test things. But I think we are going to see some integrations. And I think you're right on the iCloud front. I think some of these little hiccups and bumps in the road are going to get smoothed out. And I think it is sometimes because of the past history, it's hard to see that vision that, you know what, oh, Apple's making the same classic mistakes. But if you look deeper, I think, and you get past that, you go, oh, okay. So really, in comparison, the iCloud rollout was really smooth. And there are a couple of little annoying things, but I don't think there are any real big deal breakers in there, or there hasn't been for me.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things. First of all, when you think of everything that happened that week that this rolled out, I mean, I think they updated iTunes, they updated, you know, they updated the OS, they did all these updates at once. And the fact that there wasn't mushroom clouds over Cupertino is impressive, you know, really, yeah. When you think about it. The second thing is, you know, this is Apple with millions and millions of installed base users. You know, they don't get the benefit of a small company that gets to start one of these services at small scale. And Apple does not have the experience with scale that someone like Google does. And so they're learning and they're definitely going to make mistakes. They've made mistakes so far. I think this thing with documents in the cloud is a mistake. I'm sure they'll make more mistakes with this cloud stuff. But their aim is getting better. I mean, if you use a dart analogy, they're getting closer to the bullseye the more darts they throw. And I think I never really thought about it before, but your analogy really makes sense in essence that this is really like Mac OS X for online for them. You know, they're kind of giving up on the old stuff and they're kind of taking a fresh look at it and they're bringing some new ideas to the table. And I'm sure I sound like an apologist, but I do think that this service is going to be very useful for a lot of us. The problem I have is I really, in my mind, I had built this scenario of how I was going to be using iCloud documents every day. And until they get that little piece with the Mac fixed, it really is putting a hitch in my giddy up.
Right. And I think for me, the third-party app integration is going to be a big deal, too. See, the thing is I still rely on some apps that have tie-ins with iDisk.
Yeah.
Because it works. You know, I can get and big one being Omni Outliner. I mean, that's how I get stuff back and forth through Omni Outliner. So I'm looking forward to the day when they implement integrate documents in the cloud integration because I think it's going to make my life a lot simpler. And they don't have, unfortunately, that's the one app that doesn't have Dropbox. But Dropbox is the thing that's getting me by every other place. So I think Apple had that on their plate too, is they were kind of running up against everybody, you know, using Dropbox, and that's integrated with so many apps and integrated so tightly into my life that it's going to be, you know, not difficult but challenging to wrestle that away.
And yeah, I don't think it needs to go away.
I don't think it goes away. I don't think it goes away either, but because I think it's a different philosophy. And so I kind of railed Apple early on for taking a different approach, but it might end up being the better thing because for some things, the way Apple's doing it makes sense. And for other things, it's going to make sense for more of a Dropbox model. And I think it's great that developers will be able to choose what works for their users and for their apps and for sort of how things would flow.
And the way I look at it is, for some people, the Dropbox approach will never work. It just will never work.
Right.
And I mean, there's people that I set up new computers on. I always get a free Dropbox account for friends when I set up their computers. And I put a folder on their computer and I say, this is where you save documents. And I don't even really explain to them what's happening, because they would just not understand it. And everybody that's listening to this show knows that person, right?
And I'm assuming you tell them that their stuff's going into the cloud and make sure
that's
okay with them.
Yeah, I tell them that. But I mean, usually like an example is a student or something, you know,
right.
and my daughter is a good example. I mean, she's in high school and she doesn't know what's going on. But if her Mac suddenly dies, all the papers she's writing are backed up in the Dropbox cloud. And so, you know, but if I said, okay, now you need to set up a Dropbox account and share files between your iPad and your Mac, it just wouldn't happen, you know. And the Apple approach works. There is zero user involvement, really. You check a box, says, yes, I want iCloud, and that's it.
Or, flip a switch, right?
Yeah.
And that's the mentality.
Yeah.
And so you just gave me a good lead-in, because let's talk a little bit about iTunes in the cloud. Because for me, that's where that service failed, because it's not a flip a switch, easy to use, you know, it just works kind of experience, which for me was a bit disappointing when I started to use Xerox. I still like it, but I recognize also that I'm a technical person, and I can kind of figure out some of the hoops that I had to jump through to kind of get it to work and do the things that I wanted it to do. And so I guess that's only where my disappointment came in, not from the actual execution or how the technology works, because it does what it says it will do, but getting it to do what it says it will do didn't seem that user-friendly to me.
Yeah, I'd agree that Apple did a poor job of communicating how it works, which is not really like them.
Yeah.
Usually they do a great job of showing you how the stuff works, and it did take some tinkering to figure out. And by the way, I guess to promote, Katie and I this weekend are recording like a hour and a half to 2 hour marathon iTunes in the cloud or iTunes Match show.
Ooh.
Where we're going to talk about the whole thing, how you set it up and all the things that can go wrong. And so if you're interested in that, look at the Mac Power Users feed. I think it'll be probably the second week of December that it comes out. But anyway, so I've been really looking into it deep, but I would agree that Apple didn't do a very good job of saying how to do it. And there's a couple things about it I don't like. One of the big ones is it's kind of an all or nothing. You either have it or you don't. And when you turn it on, it like removes all your music. And, you know, it's like, wow, I didn't expect that to happen. And then, you know,
it removes all your music, but not really, like from the device.
Yeah, exactly.
It wipes out the library, right? But it doesn't actually take the music off, per se, which is one of those tricks. That's one of those hoops.
Right? Yeah, but you think it's gone because it says it's removing it, you know?
Right.
And so it's kind of nutty, you know? And if you're the not Dropbox guy, when you see that, you know, you're gonna freak out, because if you're the not Dropbox guy, you probably also haven't done a very good job of backing up and all the other things that are involved with this. So it seems to me like they're inviting pain with the way it's implemented. But if you use it properly, it's really pretty fantastic. I mean, to be able to be anywhere and just be able to pull something up on your phone or your iPad is kind of awesome. I was walking through a Target with my kids, And we were talking about our favorite Christmas songs because they were playing really terrible. You know how they do in those stores, right. You know?
The
kind of, yeah, the stuff that, you know, you want to go bang your head against the wall next to the programmer from a few minutes ago. And we were talking about Phineas and Ferb, you know, because we watched that show and they had a Christmas special. So we bought the music last year. And of course, that's not on my iPhone, right?
Right. You don't keep that synced.
Yeah. So, but I just whip up my iPhone. I've got a good 3G signal. I dial it up, push a button, and in like a minute, we were walking down the aisles in Target singing Phineas and Ferb together. And that's kind of awesome, you know, when you think about it. So I think it's great, but there is a learning curve involved, which maybe there shouldn't be.
Yeah. The other thing that I wish was there, and I kind of understand this from a technology standpoint, I wish, because I'm totally biased because I've gotten really into Pandora on my iPhone.
Yeah.
To supplement my iTunes library. And so two things. You already mentioned the all or nothing, and I belabored this on the MacCast, so I won't run people through it again. But I like having a certain sort of base set of music always on my iPhone. I don't want to have to re-download all that stuff is what it comes down to. So not being able to do that. And then the other thing is, I don't necessarily want to download that song to my device. I don't understand why it just can't stream.
Well, I can think of
like
some
true
good reasons.
Purely stream. Well, but they yeah. do pure stream on the Mac.
Yeah.
So but, even if it was only if they said, well, streaming only over Wi-Fi, if you're on 3G, it has to download. But that doesn't even make any sense because it's still the same number of bits going back and forth. I guess the second time you play it, it isn't. So maybe it's a bandwidth saving thing with the cell carriers. I have no idea.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that there are reasons why that would exist that don't make sense to us. I mean, my day job, I'm a lawyer. I do a lot of contracts and really weird licensing deals. I've been involved in them myself where I can see a situation where they would have the right to stream it to a computer, but not to a mobile device.
Right.
That is certainly within the realm of possibility. I mean, and that's just me guessing again, my world, that wouldn't surprise me if that was the reason why, or it could be technological. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why, but the point is, you know, I've got Phineas Ferb on my phone now.
Right.
And in January I can take it off.
You can delete it.
Or even if my phone feels like it needs space and it says, boy, Dave hasn't listened to Phineas and Ferb for 6 months, that's one of the tracks it'll just wipe out for me.
Yeah,
so
automatically.
It's okay with me the way that works. And frankly, for a mobile device, it's preferable that it download it instead of stream it because I may want to listen to it again. And if I'm in a poor coverage area, then I'm not going to be able to hear it unless it's downloaded.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons why I think they might have done that.
Yeah. I think also a part of it is probably because if you're on 3G and you have the not unlimited data plan, you're not grandfathered in like us old fogies who've had iPhones for forever.
I gave mine up. I gave up my unlimited data.
I mean,
data.
You could very easily, if you were streaming all of your music all the time, you could very easily go over your data cap.
Yeah. I gave it up for tethering. I gave up the unlimited data plan.
Yeah, I'm maybe getting close to that.
People told me I'm crazy for that, but Victor, our friend Victor Cahiao from the Typical Mac User said, Dave, look at your usage.
Right.
And I was looking at my usage. I'm like using, you know, 300 megabytes a month,
exactly.
Maybe 500 a month. And I've got unlimited. And boy, tethering, I use that probably a couple times a week because as I'm going around the place, I want to be able to get my Mac on the internet. So it was worth it to me. But yeah.
I may very well be in the same place. I have about 1 month a year where I actually go over the 2 gigs, and it's only when I'm in Pismo Beach for a week and I have no internet access, and so I'm using my phone constantly as my only connection. While we're on this iTunes thing, I need to ask you. I'm going to get your opinion on something, there really I don't think is an answer to this, but one of my listeners brought it up to me, and I want to throw it out to the community in case anybody else is bumped into this, but he buys seasons on iTunes, TV shows. So he's catching up on old TV shows and he's buying whole seasons. And when you buy a whole season of a show that's already been released, so not the season pass thing where, you know, it automatically downloads each episode as it comes out, The problem is especially if you buy the HD versions, iTunes then goes and immediately starts downloading every episode, SD and HD, of the TV show. And if, you know, if it's got 23 episodes or whatever, that takes up a lot of space.
Now, does it on his Mac or on his...
On the Mac. Yeah. And so there's no way to control that other than, you know, you can, in the download thing, go through and pause all the extra shows. You know, he's like, I just want to watch one and then go to the next one and I'll download the next one. And so my initial thing back to him was, well, the only thing I could think of that you could possibly could do is if you go into the iTunes preferences in the store... there's a checkbox that says always check for available downloads. Because he said the problem was is he would pause all the extra shows that he didn't want to have download. And then the problem was that would work fine for that session with iTunes. But when you would relaunch iTunes, it would automatically go check for downloads and then start downloading everything in the background again.
Yeah.
So my idea was, well, if you uncheck the always check for available downloads, then they wouldn't automatically download. And you could run that manually from the store menu. Again, if you do that, though, it's going to download everything that's sitting in iTunes available for download. But then I said you could go to, you know, then through the store menu, go to the purchase tab and try and download just the one episode.
You know, apparently
that didn't work either because it still, once he initiated that one download, I forget what he was saying, it didn't, I have to go back to the email. But that didn't work out quite that well or quite the way he wanted it. And so I'm just curious if anybody's run into that and knows a way. I know there's been some complaints up out there about, I wish I could have the option to only get the HD and not the SD because I'm never going to watch it on my, you know, on my iPhone. I only want it on my desktop or vice versa. You know, I only want the SD, not the HD. And there's no option for that right now as far as I know.
I've never purchased a TV series. I mean, really, if the whole world watched TV as much as I did, a lot of TV networks would be out of business. But the I know, like, for instance, with podcasts and iTunes, you can really get pretty granular with what gets downloaded on a particular podcast. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they have a similar set of controls for TV series. Like, you can pick what gets downloaded or what versions. I would just be, if I had... I don't have one subscribed, so I can't experiment with it. But right. if you have a TV series season pass, see if you can right click on it or something in iTunes and get those kinds of controls like you get with podcasts. Because with the podcast, you can be very specific about what gets downloaded and how long it gets kept. And
yeah, they have that extra little menu at the bottom. The TV shows, as far as I know, just do not have that. They don't have that little settings button.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
that would be nice.
Yeah, it's something they need to add. But I think this goes back to our earlier conversation. You know, iTunes evolved as a, and I think there's a lot of people who would argue that in a lot of ways that there's at least a lot of areas within iTunes you could point to where it's like, that's kind of, that little piece over there is kind of broken and that little piece over there is kind of broken. We can get highly critical, but you have to remember Apple's kind of had to shoehorn a bunch of stuff into iTunes that it was never really built for when they envisioned it, right?
Yeah. I wonder if someday iTunes becomes a web app and stops becoming a desktop app.
It very much so is today. I mean, a lot of the stuff that's in it is like that. And I think, you know, with something like iTunes in the cloud, if more stuff moves into the cloud, it makes it infinitely more possible for Apple to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know this for certain. Boy, I think you should have a drinking game for every time I say that today. But I think that iTunes is one of the last holdover apps that isn't fully 64-bit and hasn't got some of the updates that most of the other native Mac OS X apps have.
Yeah. I'd have to go drill in and look. I always forget, but I think you might be right.
Yeah. Well, that's a common discussion point on podcasts and among Mac nerds is, you know, how iTunes has become the 10-headed beast.
Well, I think we're getting close to time. Wow, this flew by. I've been having such a good time. One last thing that I want to talk to you about, and I brought this up with you earlier. I just did an episode for MacCast members on some of my kind of favorite accessories. You know, we're getting to the holiday time, and people are probably wondering, well, what do I want to ask for myself? If you're the Mac geek in the family, or if you know other Mac users or Apple fans, and you're, I wonder what to get for so-and-so. So I wanted to find out maybe two things, actually. What are some of your favorite things, and do you have anything on your wish list for Mac gear?
I could tell you some of my favorite things to start with.
Some of the favorite things. And what I focused on were the things that I've come across these products that I got, and I suddenly realized they're like heavily integrated into my life. Like, yeah, I wouldn't imagine not having these accessories.
I'd have to say that my ScanSnap scanner.
Oh.
And they've got a big one and a little one, and you know, whichever works for you. But boy, I run that thing all the time.
Which one do you have?
I have the S1500M.
Ooh. That's nice. That's the big one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty awesome. I mean, I scan stuff on it all day. And there's so many people in my professional life that ask me, hey, I want to get a scanner. And I always tell them, just get the ScanSnap and don't worry about it.
Yeah. I have just the little S300M. It's an older model, kind of the middle of the line one. And it's really completely changed and made my life simpler in terms of how I manage my documents and files, because now I just have a little stack. When it gets to a certain height, I feed that through there, and then I just have a banker's box, and I don't even have to file or organize anything anymore, because I don't do that with paper. You know, it goes into that box, and at the end of the year, it's just labeled. You know, I have one. This one will be labeled 2011, and it'll go on a shelf, and I'll know, okay, there's all the 2011 papers. They're in there, but really, when I want to look them up, I'm looking them up the versions I scanned in with the ScanSnap. Yeah. And what software do you use for, and we might've talked about this before, but I think, in my case, I'm using, the Neat Works software actually with my Fujitsu scanner for document management. So I'll go in there after I've scanned them all, maybe once a month or every month and a half or so, I'll go into everything goes into kind of this inbox.
Yeah.
And then I can label and organize it. A lot of the OCR stuff happens automatically. So that's really cool software, because you can actually, you know, if there's an amount on a receipt or something like that, you can just click on the amount and drag it into the amount field, because it picks up the OCR or a title on something, or a credit card number or receipt number, order number, all that stuff. You can just quickly do data entry. And then I organize that all into different folders, because I'll have, you know, certain receipts or things that need to be filed under my business. So I, you know, all my file folders are within that app.
Yeah.
And that's really, really made my life a lot simpler. And now when I go to do my taxes at the end of the year, it's great, because I take my laptop, and if I forgot to total something up, or, you know, she asks me about a receipt because my tax person is really great. She'll be like, hey, do you have this, or how much did you spend on that? It's like, oh, I forgot about that. But there it is right at my fingertips, and within two shakes, I can find it.
Yeah, I think it's a great investment. They're not cheap, but it's, if you need a scanner,
you know,
get the one that works, and then you'll have it for years.
For me, it's fallen into one of those things of like backup and hard drives. You know, it's like when I had all this paper, I could never find anything. How much time did I waste in the past when I had to go get one of those things, you know, or get organized at the end of the year? It's simplified my life, and it's one of those time saving things, and every little hour that it's saved me throughout the year more than makes up for the initial investment, I think.
Another thing I really like is this. Can you hear that?
That's your clickety clackety keyboard.
Yeah, I have the Tactile Pro 2. I just love this keyboard. I just beat the hell out of it, and it just keeps going. And I think it's because I started computing back in the day with those big, heavy IBM keyboards. And this is a mechanical switch keyboard, and I just love it. And everybody in my family doesn't like it, because they can hear me working at the other end of the house.
Well, at least they know you're home, right?
And my podcast listeners don't like it, and I'm not sure Katie likes it. I'm pretty much sure everybody in my life doesn't like this keyboard except me, and I love it.
You need to get a separate podcast recording keyboard. Get the little... That's funny that you put a keyboard on your list, because my Apple wireless keyboard was on my list.
Yeah, I have one of those. Recently, we upgraded the iMac and got a new wireless keyboard, and I've been doing that now. When I podcast tonight, I didn't think of it, but when we do a show, I get the wireless keyboard out and use it for that. But if I had my druthers, I'd be on this Tactile Pro all the time. I was still using it on Mac Power Users for a while, but I started getting hate mail about it, so I stopped using it.
How about anything with your iPad?
I really like, I forget the name. There's an external battery that I carry for big trips. You know, with the iPad, I love the smart cover. I think it's a great bit of tech. You know, the way it folds over and turns off and on, and it's a stand, and you can just tear it off, because I like using the iPad without anything.
It's interesting you mention that, because I do the same thing, and it's become incredibly versatile. And it's one of those things that you don't really think about, which I think is what makes it cool, is that it just works, and I use it in all the configurations. You know, I'll use it as on the desk. I've been flipping it around because I've been watching some Netflix, you know, at night, and just propping it up. It makes it a lot easier. And then sometimes it's just like, oh, I don't want it right now. It's just getting in the way. And you just pop it off and set it aside, and away you go. You just don't even think about it.
And people say, well, aren't you worried about the back of it getting scratched? And I don't really care if it gets scratched, because, you know, first of all, I am a nerd. So it's very unlikely I'll be using this iPad for 4 years. Most likely, I'll be using it for a year. If the rumors are true and they come out with a double resolution one next year, I'll definitely be getting a new one. So then I'll either be selling it, or I'll be handing it down to my wife or daughter, and they'll take it if it's got a scratch or not. You know, really? it hasn't scratched.
Yeah, it's incredibly durable.
Yeah, I haven't scratched it yet.
And I don't know what they did on that, because prior metal stuff, you know, whatever that texture is, they layer on top of it. It's on there. I don't know if that's etched in or how they do that, but you know, mine's a little dinged on the corners, but beyond that, it's held up incredibly well.
It's kind of funny. In my daily travels, I don't carry a lot of tech. I carry a MacBook Air, but I don't carry an AC adapter for it, because it's the 13-inch MacBook Air, and I've never had the battery run out on me. Yeah, I do have a cord at the office, so I can plug in there, but generally, I don't carry an adapter, and I carry an iPad, and generally no accessories. I've got some small little cables, you know, those like 3-inch stubby cables if I need to plug into something, but even those rarely come out. You know, it's got to the point where you don't need to carry all that stuff.
Yeah. Do you have anything on your wish list for this year?
You know, it's funny. I'm pretty fortunate that I just got a new microphone. I got a Blue Yeti, which I like. Which, it's not as nice as my old microphone, but my old microphone was having troubles. So I kind of like that, but there's not a whole lot I need. And, you know, I've got kids, and we're looking down the road at college and all these other things. So I'm just telling people, don't give me
no wishful thinking, Kitschy. So I'm treating myself this Christmas, and you know, I like toys. I like little geeky things. And I did order, have you seen the Sphero?
No, what's that?
Oh.
I'm not sure. Should I know?
This might end up on your wish list. The Sphero.
Google Sphero.
Sphero is this remote-controlled ball that you can control with your iPhone. And it has induction charger. So it's rechargeable, but it's induction. It goes on this little stand. It has colored LEDs in it, but within the app, you can, you know, through a color picker, select the color that you want the ball to be.
Yeah
they have
I'm
all these
looking at the video now.
They have all these little apps. They have an app that's like a golf app that uses the accelerometer, and you know, it sends Bluetooth, I think, to the Bluetooth or Wi-Fi to the little ball to control it. A little motor in there, and you can roll it around. They have an app where you'll be able to just like trace a pattern on the iPhone screen, and then the ball will mimic that pattern on the floor. So hopefully it works really well. You know, it's kind of, I think it's $129. It's not cheap.
I kind of want a Sphero now.
But it's got a lot of really cool technology on it. And I pre-ordered it to make sure I got it this year. I don't know where they're at with their orders, how many they have. But it was they alluded it was going to be limited. We'll see if it's actually going to be limited. But it's a cool little thing. You know, a splurge. I don't need it, but it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope it is.
Well, I saw a picture of myself and realized that I'm getting portly. So I've been kind of on a diet and trying to exercise more. And I had toyed with the idea of asking for one of these Up bracelets.
Oh, yeah.
But the reviews have not been that good.
They have not been good, have they?
And I don't really see myself at the end of the day wearing this thing around all the time. There's a couple things about it I liked. I liked the idea that it would wake you up with sleep cycles, but I use an app for that. There's a sleep cycle app I paid like $1 for on my iPhone. And it, this is to tell you what a nerd I am. I use it almost every night where I just put in, you know, 5 or 5:30, and then the sleep cycle is monitoring how much I'm moving on the bed. And it realizes when I'm kind of not in deep sleep and wakes me up around my alarm time when it's optimal. And it works.
Do you put it, really, it under the pillow or under you? Or
well,
like,
we have a – I guess I'm getting way too personal here, but we have a comforter.
So tell us about your bed habits.
Yeah, exactly. We have a comforter, so I just stick it under the comforter, and it works just great. And so I don't really need the app for that. Mm-hmm. And I can't really see myself walking around the office all day wearing the thing. And there's a really nice place for lunch. There's a vegetarian place like 2 miles from my office. And if I leave, it takes me about 20 minutes to walk there and 20 minutes to walk back. So I already know how far I'm walking. Yeah. So the more I thought about it, it's one of those things where the day it came out, I'm like, man, I should just go get it. And then I said, well, I'll ask for it for Christmas. And then, you know, with a little time, I got out of my own personal reality distortion field. And
that's the jawbone folks, right?
Yeah.
But it has not been getting good reviews.
Well, I think some people were saying that
technology problems, right?
Yeah, I think they were like bricking themselves, and you know, so it, I don't know. At the end of the day, it seemed like a good idea, but then I realized all the stuff I wanted it for, I really already had.
Yeah. I guess last thing I was going to ask you about this earlier: 15-inch MacBook Air. The rumors we're hearing.
Yeah, I mean,
you're an Air fan.
It makes sense. I don't know if I would get one or not. I really like the looks of the 11-inch, except for the fact that I spend a large portion of my day working off a laptop, and I think the 11 would be too small.
Yeah, the screen. There's a certain amount of screen real estate, and that's why I have a, you know, and people laugh at me because I'm a web programmer, and I just have my 15-inch MacBook Pro, and that's my only screen. So on my big dream wish list is a Thunderbolt display.
Yeah.
But I can't afford that. I'm not going to be getting one of those anytime soon, which is, you know, the one reason somebody was asking me recently, you know, should I upgrade to Lion? And they didn't really have a good, compelling reason why. And they're like, you know, I'm really happy with Snow Leopard. It runs great on my machine. I have a 3-year-old machine. It's only got 2 gigs of RAM. I said, you probably don't need to upgrade unless you can tell me why you know, what feature in Lion that you absolutely need. You probably don't need to upgrade. And I said, it could even be if you're just the type of person, I always want to be running the latest and greatest. Well, that's a valid reason to upgrade, but you have to have some sort of reason to upgrade. And he said, well, you know, why do you like it? And for me, I just like to upgrade first of all, but the one feature that's been big for me is the full screen mode in apps. And I don't think I could go back because I couldn't live without full screen mode, but that's because I only have one 15-inch screen.
Yeah.
I need the real estate.
I got the MacBook Air last year with the redesign, you know, the 13-inch. And, you know, they came out with a new one this year that's much faster and better. But I'm really trying to keep this one 3 years. I kind of fell off the wagon for a while there. I used to keep computers 3 years, and it seems like the last 2 years that hasn't been the case. And I find some excuse to buy a new one or replace one. And I'm hoping that I'll keep this one 3 years. So I'm already over a year into it, and I think I'll be fine. The one thing that would really tempt me is if they were able to put more than the 4 gigabytes of RAM in, because that's the one thing I don't like about the 13-inches. I'm spoiled with my iMac. I have a lot more RAM than that, and you can see the difference.
Yeah, I did have to upgrade my 15-inch MacBook Pro to 8 gigs when Lion came out, but I think that was mostly a Safari problem. And I guess there's another news article, Safari update. Came out that supposedly addresses the memory hogging issues. And I've been hearing good things, so I haven't applied the update yet, but that just came out like today or yesterday. Can't remember.
Yeah.
Supposedly supposed to fix that. So maybe I didn't need that extra RAM, but I also use Parallels for my development work, and it definitely helps if you're running virtualization to have that extra memory.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, all right. Well, David, thanks for hanging out. It looks like we ended up at about an hour.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
And we'll have to get Victor together and do another nerd dinner one of these days.
Always fun to geek out. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll get Victor. We should get Victor in and just do another show.
Yeah.
But I love having you on because you're such a wealth of knowledge, especially when it comes to some of this productivity and iPad stuff. So people definitely should go on the iBook store or the Kindle store and find your book. iPad at work. You also have Mac at work still out there, right?
Yeah, it's still. I think it's still timely. There's some of it's no longer good because it was before Lion, but most of the books about apps and that stuff is still good.
And I'm going to be checking out that Mac Power Users episode because I need some more help with the whole iTunes in the cloud thing.
We're going to talk through about how to upgrade your tracks, you know, so you can get them off your. Basically, you can remove all your DRM and upgrade your cheap tracks to, you know, the full 256-bit, 256, 257, 258, right? Did you ever see Mr. Mom? And we're going to talk through the whole process. And I had some problems with some of my tracks where things went wonky, and I'm going to explain how I fixed it. I'm actually looking forward to the show because it's been a lot of fun prepping for it because there's so much to learn. And this is a great opportunity for us with our listeners because Apple did kind of drop the ball and not explain it very well.
Yeah. And I'm going to do a little teaser too, because I'm going to do something kind of similar. I'm going to have Ara Derderian back on from the HDTV podcast, who I haven't had on in a long time.
I met him. He's so awesome.
Yeah, very knowledgeable. He built very early on a whole home theater system around Mac Minis, and he just switched over everything to Apple TV 2s. So I'm going to talk to him about how he changed his setup and what he's doing there, because I know a lot of people are wondering about sort of centralizing their iTunes and media libraries now that Apple has, you know, TV shows and movies. I'm buying more digital content, and it's becoming a problem. You know, sort of how do you manage all that and keep it all together? So we're going to dive into some of that stuff. So somewhat related to this iTunes stuff. And
well, I'm going to be listening to that one. So we're even.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for hanging out. It's always great pleasure to have you on the Maccast.
Like I said earlier, Adam, talking to you is the dessert of my day.
So kind.
All right. Take care.
Bye. So there you go, David Sparks, great guy. You can find him hanging out at Mac Power Users with Katie Floyd. They're over on the 5x5 Network. If you haven't checked out that podcast, you really should. Also over at MacSparky.com, which is his blog. He does some great writing over there, too. I like to read the stuff he throws up and has some great tips and tutorials and tricks and stuff like that. So if you're looking for that sort of thing, check all of that out. That's going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to thank all of my show sponsors. Phoronix, makers of Deep Freeze. You can check out their software. Get more information and details over at phoronix.com. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. More information and details as well as free trials are available over at circusponies.com. Smile, check out Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label. Great software. I use all of it, and you can get trials and more information over at smilesoftware.com. And make sure you head out and check out the RunRev live code software and sign up for their free Game Academy. You can find more information on that and sign up over at runrev.com/academy/MacCast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. Big thank you to you for your support of the show. I mentioned it earlier, the community is what really makes this thing work. And obviously, you are a big part of that. So thank you for contributing. If you want to add your voice, if you want to send me some feedback, send me an audio comment. If you have a question, topic you want to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, please send your email MacCast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-9. You can leave voicemail there. I want to remind people there's a 3-minute limit because it's Google Voice, so just be aware of that when you're calling in. If you have longer than that, I'm happy to get it, but you might have to leave a couple voicemails, and that's fine too. I can stitch them together if need be. You can also leave voicemail on Skype. The Skype address is the MacCast. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I've talked about in episodes of the MacCast, you can find those at maccast.com. Also on the website, a great online community of MacCast listeners hangs out in the MacCast forum. That's at forum.maccast.com, and you can sign up there for free and participate in that. You can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. That's going to do it for this week. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.